Hey, it's Stephanie here. This episode comes with a content warning. This is simply to empower you, our audience, with the knowledge you need to make a healthy decision about how and if you should consume this podcast content. We do talk about physical abuse, assault, financial abuse, bullying, and depression. There are also mentions of disabilities, past lives, ADHD, autism, and managing trauma or PTSD in adulthood. I am not a doctor or a therapist, nor are the guests on the show. The stories, ideas, and thoughts expressed are those of the guests alone. A list of resources are available in the podcast description, where I have tried to list as many hotlines, info pages, and supports I could find. Please take care of yourself, and if you need to, don't be afraid to reach out and ask for help.
I'm so glad you're here.
Hello and welcome to Town Rituals Red Tent Gathering. In this episode, the guests and I are reaching deep into our memories to share our most treasured memories and moments. Some of these stories bring forth joy, a touch of shame, the glamour of movie-like romance, big laughter, and a combination of love and grief. The story I'm about to tell you is not one that I share easily. It occurred at a time in my life when I was young, stubborn, impressionable, a bit of responsibility with little to no instruction. So while you listen to this story and you hear me laugh, please understand that the laughter and the joy of telling a story comes after many, many years of holding it to myself and a deep, deep sense of embarrassment and shame. That unfolded for this young boy and I involved for me are a sharp memory and a retelling of what should have been an adventurous, curious weekend of Boy Scouting. When I was 15 years old, I was part of a Pathfinders, which is Girl Guides for Teenagers. After a weekend camping at Fort York in Toronto, my friend Jenny and I were met by the district commissioner and our Pathfinder leader at the next meeting without our parents. We were informed that we did not the Girl Guide spirit, and we were asked not to continue to attend meetings or events. Now, I promise you, the events that led to the dismissal from Girl Guides are a story for another time. In lieu of Girl Guides, I joined a adventure group, which is Boy Scouting for teenagers. I can assure you, I had as a venture were far more exciting and interesting than Pathfinders or Girl Guides ever was. As part of our responsibilities as ventures, each we were required to do 20 to 40 years of volunteer work. When I was 16, our venture group was contacted by a Beaver Scout group, which is roughly boys who are 6 to 8, who were out going winter camping at Camp Samak in Ontario. It was a weekend of outdoor winter adventure while staying in a cabin. Myself and another female venture were to look after a young 6-year-old boy who had been born a paraplegic. We arrived on Friday, positioned with responsibility as support to this young boy, but not elders or organizers or wranglers of the Beaver Scouts otherwise. We were not necessarily participants as Boy Scouts, and we were not necessarily leaders of the group. Our responsibility was to ensure Daniel was wherever the boys were and that he was completely engaged. So what did this mean? This meant that if the boys were upstairs playing a game in the bunk room, we took Daniel up the flight of stairs and put him in the center of it. If the boys were in the kitchen or the mess area, we took Daniel downstairs and he was in the middle of it. Our role was to be shadows on the wall. We were to be his legs and also caretakers. We replaced his parents in terms of his support, but we weren't his parents. Again, our job was simply to ensure that whatever was happening, Daniel was in the thick of it. So we arrived on Friday ahead of the Beaver Scout and ahead of Daniel. We were given brief instructions by the leaders to ensure that Daniel was everywhere the other boys were. Daniel arrived with his parents. We had a conversation with them that this particular weekend was Daniel's first sleepover and the first weekend away from his parents since he had been born. I had enough sense to ask his parents if there was anything we needed to know about looking after Daniel. Daniel's parents clearly felt confident and secure in my and the other adventurers' abilities to look after him. Their response was, whatever Daniel needs, he'll. There were other duties that I had not anticipated, nor had anyone explained. And thank goodness the other venture volunteer already had experience with this type of care, such as helping or assisting Daniel insert a tube into his penis himself. I had no experience in this, and by no means would this be allowed today. But somehow, myself and the other female got to go to the bathroom. We were there for him to do other things, such as changing him into pajamas or getting him dressed, getting him in his sleeping bag. We were also the first ones awake to ensure that, again, Daniel went to the washroom and was ready when all the other boys were getting ready as well. Point on Saturday, it was decided that the group would go for a hike. My Daniel into his winter attire and get myself geared up and ready to hike. By taking Daniel for a hike, my role was to put him in his sled, hook the rope around my waist, and pull him in the middle of the pack. While we congregated at the back of the cabin waiting for the leaders and the rest of the Beaver Scouts, Daniel wanted to go sledding. At the back of the cabin was a not too steep, just long and meandering enough. Just a gentle toboggan experience. I unraveled the rope from around my waist, put it in the sled, and pointed Daniel straight as I could towards the downhill. I remember with such clarity Daniel turning to me and asking, "Are you going?" I'm going to hold the story for a moment, a little about 16-year-old me. I would not label myself a tomboy, but I was definitely rough and tumble and very independent. I had grown up working on farms and farmers markets and being given a lot of responsibility as a young person with an incredible amount of freedom. The idea that someone needed me to sit in the toboggan with them was something that never crossed my mind. What I didn't understand was that Daniel was telling me he needed me to be on the slide with him. I should also point out that I was a tough kid that wore army boots and I had laryngitis. By Saturday at hike time, I had zero voice. Only a raspy, dog-like sound came out anytime I spoke. So with a 1, 2, 3, I gave Daniel a push and off he went down the hill. The first downward slope evens out towards another small slope. And suddenly Daniel hollered at me, "Stephanie, I can't stop." And I watched as he picked up speed. As best I could, I yelled back, "Daniel, lean over." My thought was that if he leaned over, he would simply tumble out of the sled, roll over and out onto the snow, stopping his fast-paced descent down the hill. Daniel followed my instructions by leaning left, except he didn't tumble out. The sled cut hard left, and to my horror, I realized that at the bottom of the hill, there was a bridge, and that bridge went over a river where the at mating season. To the left and the right of this hill, as the slope gets closer to the bridge, there is a cliff on either side, a thick forest of wonderful Ontario native trees rising from below. I start running, chasing Daniel down the hill, and suddenly there is a pack of beavers chasing me, and I am screaming, "Fall over, fall over." And the boys behind me, I swear to God, are just screaming in sheer absolute joy and chaos as we run down this hill. Daniel continues to cut hard left towards the cliff, and I am screaming through my raspy voice, "Please lean over." And I watch with awe as Daniel takes off through the air, over the cliff, into the trees, and disappears.
Good.
I race to the edge of the cliff and I see him at the bottom of this little cliff about a story and a half high, his belly up against a tree, his body on its left side, not moving. Without another, I jumped down. I didn't even know how I got down, and I scrambled across the very deep snow. When I reached Daniel, I had not one thought for any first aid. I grabbed his right shoulder and his pants at his right side, and I pulled him onto his back. What I saw caused my heart and my chest to crumble. Blood was pouring from his nose. Daniel looked up at me, and all I heard was a whimper through both of our tears. "I trusted you," he wailed, and I began to sob uncontrollably. I bring Daniel into my arms, not knowing what to do, how to get him out. What the hell is going on? How did I get here? And I look up at the edge of the cliff, and a dozen or so young six-year-old faces are staring in curiosity, shock at the scene below. I gather my wits and I find my voice. Go get an elder. Go find a leader. Bring them back here immediately. Off go running a half dozen boys, footsteps retreating in the crunchy snow. I don't remember a lot of what transpired in the next few minutes. One of the leaders suddenly appears and jumps down the cliff, half falling on his own as he descends. He crawls across the snow. He takes Daniel from my arms, picks him up as only a parent knows how to cradle and hold a hurt child, and he begins to climb the cliff face. He gets halfway up and he slips and he slams Daniel against the earth as they slide down. This poor child, I am powerless. I let forth a new set of tears. Adrenaline leaves my body, and somehow that leader gets Daniel to the top and they are gone. One by one, the faces of the young boys disappear from the cliff's edge. Somewhere in me, I find an echo of strength. I begin to follow that delicate trail of blood left from Daniel's nose towards the cliff wall. I begin to climb. I begin to claw my way up, regardless of dirt, regardless of slipping, of sobbing tears running down my face. I somehow find the strength to pull myself up that cliff and over the edge. I stand up, still sobbing, and begin what I want to be my own walk of shame. Around me, a pack of young boys move like a group of yipping hyenas, chattering, did you see him curve left? Did you see him fly through the air? Whoosh! Where's his sled? Oh my God, are we going? I have no answers. I have nothing left in me. I only feel this deep well of failure and shame and loss that I have ruined this young man. Away from his parents. I arrived at the cabin door. I was led in by the leaders. Some shuffle out and take the boys on a hike. I'm told to take my gear off, splash my face with water, have a drink of something, and go take a break at my bunk. Sometime later, the pack leader returns from the hospital. Daniel's parents had joined him at the ER, panicked and relieved that Daniel was fine. He tells me the bloody nose was simply from the blunt force of hitting the tree. He had no broken bones, no sprains, no injuries. But Daniel had gone home and he wouldn't be returning for the weekend. I personally was barely able to participate and volunteer the rest of the weekend. When I did return to high school that following week, my classmates asked me how my weekend of adventuring had been. All I could do was cry. I couldn't even explain what had happened. I simply said, I pushed a disabled child over a cliff. And the tears would begin again. Within a few days, I tucked that memory far, far away, and I forgot it. I refused to speak of it, and I don't think I ever felt that deep, deep shame for some time. About 15 years later, for whatever reason, the memory started to surface, and I turned it into an opportunity to begin storytelling and working on my public speaking. I can see how some people find this story inappropriate and offensive. The reality is it's something that happened. It's not a fabrication. It's not a lie. I didn't do all this on purpose to this young boy. In fact, to this day, I wonder what has happened to Daniel. Where has he ended up in life? Because this shame and embarrassment that I feel is that the experience at my hand has pushed Daniel into retreating from the world, from refusing to participate in adventure, to being curious. What I do hope is that Daniel did embrace that adventure, that he continued to be curious, that he continued to seek adventure, to be challenged and to choose to rise above the unknowing of life or what lay ahead. Part of me also hopes that Daniel has forgotten this story. Part of me hopes he remembers, and part of me hopes that one day I get to know where he has ended up. I still carry with me the shame of a 16-year-old girl who failed this boy on his weekend. Weekends and adventures that I took for granted that I could engage, that I could be a part of, that I could jump and I could run and I could go tobogganing without the need for someone to pull me or to push me or to put me in the center of it all. I have never forgotten the vast difference between my and Daniel's lives. Where he had been coddled and kept safe for most of his life, I had been hustled out the door, put on a farm to work at a very young age. I'd had a lot of adventures and misadventures. I had been allowed to play in dumpsters and to build forts with construction waste. I'd stepped on a nail. I'd fractured my nose tobogganing, of all things, and that I could still get up and continue on. With me, and it is one now that I tell with some hesitation because the world has changed between now and then. But I still know this story to be true. I know this story to be shocking to some people who hear it. But I hope, if anything, this story encourages people to continue to be wild and curious and to go on adventures, to be open to mishaps, to misadventure, and to know that we are all capable of so much more than the limitations that are put on us by society. And that is my story for today. Mm-hmm. So with that, I would like to welcome writer and storyteller Aaron Rogers, our returning guest Celeste, and new to the podcast, the wonderful Josie. Welcome and thank you for being here. I'm so glad you're here.
I'm so glad you're here.
So thank you for listening to my story of Daniel. If you ever meet someone who was a Boy Scout and had a wild tobogganing experience, send them my way, because I probably know them. but I thought today we would start with Aaron to maybe share a memory or a moment that you wanted to talk about, or at least have other people listen to.
Sure. So as a kid, I was not what you would call graceful. I was just like not great at being what I thought a girl was supposed to be. And so I don't know, because I can't, you know, I don't have access to my 5-year-old brain. So I don't know if I really wanted to do ballet or I thought that was a thing that girls did. But I took a ballet class. And so I was the youngest kid in the class, and I was the smallest kid in the class, and I was the weirdest kid in the class, a theme that has continued on in my entire life. We were doing all these like beautiful, like we're five, but it's still ballet. So you do different dance moves. I'm the fancier French expressions for dance moves, but we were doing different things, and I was always like a little bit off and like couldn't quite get it, but I was very proud of myself. As far as I was concerned, I was crushing it. I was the most beautiful I'd ever been. I was the most glamorous I'd ever been. It was incredible. And then it comes to the day of the recital, and I had been looking forward to this recital. I was super excited. And they put us all out, and all the girls are in a row, and they're all standing very still somehow. I can't stand still. I'm 41 years old. I can't stand still for a minute. At five, I was just like vibrating. I was so excited, and I was at the end of the line. And so, you know, we do like this move. They put on some music. We do this move. We do that move. Then they give us the big finish, which is these scarves, and we're gonna like have these scarves float around and etc. And I was so enamored with this scarf that I kind of lost track of what was happening with everyone else. And so, you know, I was like, they were going to the left and I was going to the right because the scarf was going to the right, and it was like I was really like just kind of exploring the space. What would be said now is exploring the space, and what was when I was five, just wandering around and getting in people's way. And then the song ends, and so you're supposed to roll up your scarf, and so I was rolling up my scarf, not realizing that everybody else had finished, and I was still very carefully rolling up my scarf. And so I found out later, because I heard laughs, I found out later that I was the hit of this. I wasn't glamorous. I wasn't tiny and small and like, you know, this beautiful like little girl. I was three beats behind and continuously hilarious. And so people weren't paying attention to their own children. They were paying attention to me. And so now that is the cutest thing I've ever heard. And I wish I could see my weird little self just like living my life. But I was completely embarrassed when it was told to me later that I was behind. And I feel like so much of my childhood was me being like slightly to the left and going right when everyone was going left, or going up when everyone was going down. It was just like a continuation of that being a thing. And so the story that I kind of gave myself throughout my life was that I'm always a little bit wrong and I'm always embarrassing, and this is my life, is me always being bad at being a person and being bad at being a kid, and being bad at being an adult, and et cetera, et cetera. I'm always not quite right. Everybody else got like an instruction manual, and I don't know, turned it into origami. Like, I'm always kind of off. And not that long ago, I started realizing things about myself. Like, basically, my life is sort of like a slow striptease of me finding out more about myself, where it's like, do-do-do-do, I'm queer. Do-do-do-do, I have ADHD. And the most recent one is that I am almost certainly autistic. I haven't been officially diagnosed, but it's still valid in the autistic community. And the more I read, the more I'm like, oh my God, why did nobody tell me this? And so I feel like so much of my life now, I look back at these memories, are like, why did no one notice? Like, I was so autistic. I was so off. And also, it immediately took away any shame that I had of like looking back at these memories, because they're really cute. Like, my difference is adorable. So many times I did the wrong thing and I brought humor to people. And I feel like, to bring in my gender with it, if I was a boy, I feel like people would have been like, oh, you're so funny. But the message I got was, oh, you're so wrong. Whether it was consciously, whether people said that directly, it wasn't that like, oh, you're the class clown. It's, oh, you're the class person who does weird stuff. And so recently I was talking to my mother, and she was telling me about when I was in Mums and Tiny Tots, which was like this like little, you know, you like sing songs, it's really cute, you bond with your kid. And she got a really awkward phone call from the person that was in charge of it to basically be like, they couldn't say Aaron is behind, especially in the 80s, they didn't say stuff like that. If I was behind, that would have been like some kind of weird source of shame for some reason. So she got a call being like, we're going to put Aaron in a different group with the younger kids because she's not at, you know, I think I was not walking. I believe what happened is when everybody else started walking, I started crawling backwards, which is very on brand for my life. I started crawling backwards. And so they put me into another group. And that's where she met someone who is one of her oldest friends now, like as a, you know, as a adult, like outside of the working world, outside of childhood friends, my aunt Thelma, like that's how close she is as a family friend, they're incredibly close. They've been there for each other through thick and thin, through cancer scares, through cancer, through like loss of a child, like all these incredibly difficult things. They've been there through each other. And if it wasn't for the way that my brain is, they may never have met. And so as like, I love the way my brain works. I really do. And it's been a journey, because there was a lot of me doing the wrong thing. And because I'm a girl, it wasn't like this fun thing. It was that I wasn't doing things correctly. And sometimes it was like a joyful thing, like that ballet story. That's delightful. I brought so much joy to people. But a lot of times it wasn't that. A lot of times it was weird conversations that my mom had to have with teachers, and, you know, me, like other kids saying weird stuff. But knowing that like the way that my brain is changed my mom's life for the better, suddenly the shame was all gone. And suddenly these memories that I had really complicated relationships with just brought me so much joy. Because who knows, like, who was having a crummy day and seeing this weird kid do this bizarre performance art as a 5-year-old ballet dancer? Like, my brain brings people joy, and that brings me joy. And so all these memories have a different tone to them, and that's just magic. So I feel like for me, learning this thing about myself has suddenly changed so much about my life, and so much about the stories I've been telling myself, based on these memories and based on what other people have said. And that's magic.
That really is magic. I mean, I would say for the years that I've known you, you are a very joyful person. And I really appreciate hearing that you are able to now look back at your life and your memories and to kind of not necessarily frame them, but to see them from a different perspective and to take something new from them in terms of how you see yourself and how you remember them as well. I think that's really beautiful. Yeah. Well, it talking about, I don't know if you can hear the sirens going off.
Yeah.
talking about past selves, I'm going to bring in Celeste to take us away.
Hi. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good. I was having tech issues early. I was like, oh no.
Most definitely here.
Okay, awesome. So talking about memories, what I remember are my past lives. It's not something that I came into this world with these memories, but I started experiencing mental health issues in my late 20s, it was actually the gateway opening to past lives. And that's when it first started trickling in the memories. At first, I didn't know what the hell was going on. It was insane. It was so confusing because what came through first was the emotions. Eventually, I could connect actual memories to those emotions, but you know, feeling like extreme terror for no apparent reason was pretty disconcerting. It's funny that your story, Aaron, was about ballet stories. So I was a ballerina in a past life. And to this day, when people see me dance, or they see me move, they often assume that I have ballet training. They will ask, have you studied ballet? I haven't done a single ballet class in my life. But I get asked that all the time because I still have that in my movements. Now, if you put me in class, I probably wouldn't be that good because I don't have the conditioning. But, you know, I think these things are real. And, you know, I think that so our sense of identity is really based on what we remember. And I think that a lot of times people have memories and they'll tell you a memory of their childhood and it's very skewed to their own memory in the sense that, you know, if another person of a similar age remembers it, they might have remembered it extremely differently. But, you know, our lives are our stories. It's the stories that we tell ourselves. And, you know, it can just, it's funny how I'm not really sure how to express this. But yeah, I think for me, like it was a slow journey of memories coming back to me. And a lot of times people will ask me, well, how do you know that it's true? And I'm like, well, I don't. Like, there's no proof. I can't go into a history book and point at something that proves that I was there. I mean, I wasn't important enough to be written about, I don't think. So it's just something that lives in my mind and in my memories. And it's real. It's real to me. Therefore, it is real. I think most people who have memories, most of those memories would not hold up in court if they had to prove it in front of a judge and jury. So I think that sometimes you just have to decide, well, if it's true to me, then it is true. And it's also really expanded my sense of identity because, you know, I think, you know, I see how I've become the person I am today, not just from my childhood growing up, but who I was even before entering this life. And, you know, a lot of times you go see the psychologist and they're like, what happened in your childhood? And I'm like, oh, no, it didn't start there. It didn't start there. You know, with my homeopath/therapist, sometimes we spend an entire hour talking about a particular past life that is causing issues or coming up for me. And she'll treat that life and it works. And, you know, I have like all sorts of emotions now that I'm able to target as being like, oh, I know that emotion. I know that doesn't come from this life. I know that, you know, it must be this past life that's now coming up for healing. That's my belief. I have like physical symptoms that are related to particular past lives where, you know, I have certain skin conditions that I'm like, oh, that's showing up. That's that life. And, you know, it's just, I think it's been very beneficial to remember, just understand what the hell is going on with me, you know? And I think sometimes we just don't know, like, we just don't know what has made us ourselves, you know? And, you know, you speak, Erin, of autism and having a very specialized brain. And I'm like, oh, that's for sure. Like, you came into this life with that, right? Where did that come from? You know, there's just so much history, and it makes me so grateful for this life because it's by far the best life. I mean, I've had my challenges, but oh my God, it's been so much worse in past lives. And we have such a kinder society today, much safer, much less violence. And it's just like, oh, I feel like it's a life where, you know, it's not necessarily easy all the time, but it's quiet. It's relatively safe in comparison. So, yeah, it's a good life. It's good to be here. And
I agree.
Yeah.
I'm very grateful. I'm grateful for all of you being here and being so vulnerable with your stories. Because it's not easy to put some of these things out there, for sure. I'm curious, before we move to Josie, I'm curious if you've that kind of connecting with your past self and these memories has brought specifically around like your, I mean, I think you kind of already touched on this, but in terms of you were saying like as a, this memory as a ballerina, do you feel that once that surfaced, you understood that about yourself, that it actually brought more awareness to your body and your movement, like just even physically, that you were like, oh, look at, yes, I am graceful.
Like when it comes up, so it's interesting that you ask me that. So in shamanism, they have a practice that they call soul retrieval. And my understanding is that the idea is that, you know, when you experience an extreme trauma, a part of your soul gets left at that point in time as the rest of you keeps moving forward in time. Because you just can't, if you stay stuck in the trauma, you just can't move forward. So a piece of your soul is left there. But what happens is that over lifetimes and over this current life, if you keep leaving pieces of your soul in the past, you don't have that life energy. And so you can become quite tired. You just don't have access to all your life energy. So the practice is to go back to these places and retrieve those pieces of your soul back into yourself. So I realized when I heard about it, I actually paid somebody to do a soul retrieval. And to be honest, I think it was a waste of money. I don't think anything happened that day. But it made me realize like, hey, wait a minute. I think that's exactly what I've been doing all this time. I just thought it had to be done by somebody else. So I think what's happening is that those pieces of my soul that have been left, and they've been very, very traumatic in some cases. So thankfully they don't just all come up at once. But, you know, as they come back in all their mess. Like they just come back, like all the feelings, all the horror, all of it, it just comes back as messy as it is. But it comes for healing. And as I've been able over the years to integrate those things, I just feel much more complete as a person. And I just feel like I really belong to myself in a way, which is strange. So yeah, I think it just, it has a huge purpose behind it. And so, and I think it would be very difficult to do this work if I didn't actually have those memories associated with those emotions, because it would be very difficult to do this work if I if I had no recollection and these things would just come up and I had no understanding. Now, at least I have a framework of like how it comes together and like, oh, I understand now I have this extreme fear. And, you know, the positive part is don't typically need to be worked on, right? Like being That's a ballerina is just beautiful. You know, that grace is just something I really appreciate. But it also reminds me that when you see somebody who is just naturally gifted at something, that you're just like, damn, like, how come they've been doing this for 2 days and already they look so good? Or I remind myself, like, they paid their dues. They paid dues. You know, all the strength they have, everything they have that you envy, they paid their dues. Maybe not in this life, but in a past life. So there's no need to feel jealous because you have to know the journey that people go through to be as proficient as they are.
Yeah, that's a really wonderful perspective.
Thanks.
And I have so many questions about past lives, but I am going to bring it over to Josie to hear what she wants to share with us tonight. I think she's there.
Josie. Sorry.
I'm going to edit out that whole bit. You ladies are really making me work for it today. That's okay.
I also like that my ghost, my laugh now just was a weird ghost laugh, like, Friends, this is very cool.
Yeah.
Very neat.
Erin, you're a natural talker.
That is, yeah, that's what I got in trouble for in school. Yeah, I now get paid for all the stuff that I used to get in trouble for. It's pretty cool.
I love it. Way to like swing it back to yourself and pretty take great. The things that, yeah, that.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes. Yes.
You can welcome to the party.
Oh my God. Thank God. Okay.
Welcome to the party, pal. Sorry, reference. Continue.
Oh, Erin, I love you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, welcome back, Josie.
Oh, thank you.
I'm glad you're able to get back into the recording or to the discussion. Do you feel ready to hit us with your story or your memory?
Yeah, I'm ready. I'm glad you guys can hear me now. But I want to start by thanking you, Steph, for having me on.
Being here.
Yeah, thank you. So my story today is, or my memory today is, has to do with trust as well. although it's not as, it's a little bit more cynical. but I think that the best way to start would be to kind of recognize that when speaking with trust and like assessing the different people in the world, there are, in my eyes, two primary types of people, either people that trust too much or people that don't trust enough, right? And I'm the latter. I do not trust people very well at all. And it's probably through a series of events that have taken place through my life. I come from a family who's split up and it's fairly common, like many, it's very common, you know, to have families who are split up nowadays, especially. But I think that there are certain relationships that have influenced the way that I trust other people in my life today. It's interesting how your past has such a profound impact on how you live day to day. And the memory that I wanted to share was that, and this is quite personal. So I'm not going to mention the individual, but 7 years ago, I was asked by somebody who was very special to me to invest in a in a business, and I was blindsided by who that person was in my life. And so I did, and I invested, and that investment did not pay out. And if from that point on, I remember handing the cash to the individual, and I will never forget what was going through my head and the feeling that I had of the anticipation of being let down. It was a leap that I had taken, and unfortunately, it didn't turn out too well. And I think that that's something that had impacted me to the point where today I do not trust people very well. And the slightest thing to go wrong in my relationships is it takes a long time to correct, for me to correct. That's what I wanted to share. I think that it's a significant memory because of the, like I said, the impact that it has on my day-to-day life. And it's something that I struggle with to this day, mm-hmm. You know, and I feel like a lot of people can relate. But that's something that I'll never forget. And that happened 7 years ago. And it was such a short memory, but it was so lasting. It's really interesting.
Yep. Hey, Josie, yeah. Is it because the person misrepresented the investment? Yeah.
Yes, that's exactly it. Sorry, I might not know it well enough.
I have a question. I mean, I'm wondering if when this was happening for you, if there was a piece of you that was like, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it.
Oh, definitely. Wow.
What a costly learning or kind of experience to listen to your inner voice, right? That piece of you that says, this is a bad idea. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but because, you know, they have that place in your life, you want to take that leap of faith and give them a chance and, you know, trust them.
I hear you there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was definitely misrepresented. And, you know, it's interesting because he had this facade of a life. And, you know, he made it look as though he was living a good life and, you know, driving nice cars. And, you know, I figured, well, he must be doing well. Wow. I can probably trust him. And it didn't turn out to be that way.
Mm-hmm. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, I mean, but I can tell you this, it won't happen again. So, the memory served a purpose.
Yeah. I can't remember. I feel like it was my grandma thing, because my grandma tended to have certain like things she would say, where she was saying that it's the price of getting them out of your life permanently.
Yes. Yes.
Which sucks, which is awful. But sometimes that's a thing. Or I've realized recently that as much as it's not, because I really don't like when people are like, well, look at the bright side. I'm like, why don't you look at the bright side of my fist? But if something's happened to me, because I've been taken advantage of before, well, that happened. And how did they get to me?
Yeah.
What do I need to shore up?
Yeah.
And it's not looking at the bright side, because there's no bright side. I got screwed. Yeah. But just being like, well, like you're saying, you know, it won't happen again. I've learned my lesson. Because I didn't. For a couple of things, I didn't. I just kept being like, well, it'll be different this time. if you're wondering which side of the two people I'm at, I was at the I trust people too much side. So it is. I'm so sorry that happened to you. That's so awful, and what a terrible feeling. And I'm so sorry that it's affected your trust in that way. That's really rotten. Yeah. And I don't know how this person looks themselves in the mirror.
I know. I ask myself that too sometimes because they are still in my life and I'm completely in denial of having ever wronged me, which is even worse. Yeah. However, you know, the nice cars are no longer and.
Wow.
Yeah.
Come full circle for them.
It's interesting how, you know, such short memories, just that memory of handing an envelope of money that acted, you know, years down the road.
Mm-hmm. Josie, I'm going to say that in the years that I have known you, I have watched you grow and blossom as a person. And I actually think that you have very good and right, that when something's not right for you, either there's generally not very much swaying you on that, you know?
Yeah.
I think maybe you no longer trust people. In the time that I've known you, I'm going to say that I think you have a really good trust in yourself.
Work.
Oh, thank
you.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what's interesting, Josie, about, and since we're talking about memories, mm-hmm. you say that you remember so clearly when you gave that envelope of cash, mm-hmm. and like that's the imprint in your mind. Mm-hmm. And what I remember of past lives are those moments, those imprints. Like I will remember mm-hmm. things like people's names, people's, like, you know, I have a sense of maybe the geographic location, but nothing specific. But mm-hmm. I remember exactly the color of the dress that I wore at this particular time in my life. Like it's those emotional connections that really sink it into your brain. And like you just, like even lifetimes later, you're like, I remember the color of that dress.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, that was cool.
That's very I wonder if Josie too, that now that you did make that, like, as Celeste was saying, you have that imprint of what it felt like, and you were handing that over, and you knew there was that part of you that knew that wasn't right. And now when that similar feeling or that physical reaction arises, that's your cue to step back, right? This is not for you. Trust in yourself that this is wrong and step away.
That's true. That's true. Yeah.
I wanted to touch on something that Celeste, I think you had mentioned about when people go to court and mm-hmm. our memories can't be trusted. I mentioned earlier before we started, I had recently finished reading Sarah Polley's Run Towards the Danger. And she has an entire section about Gian Gomeshi and why she didn't come forward. And it is hard. It's not that it's hard. It's not, it was a difficult read in that so many women do not come forward because the court system is aggressive, doesn't allow for the space and the accommodation that is needed for victims or people who have been traumatized or assaulted to come forward their stories. I mean, I think we all know someone mm-hmm. who has been traumatized or a victim of something who just never came forward because the process is so arduous and our memories are tested. We're put in a place where we can't even believe what we know to be true.
And shame-filled. Yes. That's the other thing. Is like, Josie, I really hope that this wasn't your experience, but it's been my experience with people where they go like, well, why didn't you know better? Well, why did you make that choice? It's like, because I trusted someone. I'm not the person. Because it's like, I think people get so scared that that's going to happen to them that they have to make it that you couldn't figure something out. And it's like, no, it's going to happen to you at some point. Someone will take advantage of you. Someone will take advantage of your trust because there's people out there that are damaged.
And yeah, and whether or not you notice it as well.
Right? Exactly.
Might not be there.
Looking back and realizing, I wasn't aware that I was being taken advantage of, small and big, is so, and it also kind of brings me back to Stephanie, your story, where you were a child. You were a child. And as an adult now looking back at stuff that I had shame about. I was like, I was a child. Why did no one go, are you okay? Why did no adult take responsibility for certain things? Like, I see, like, I am now at the point where a few years ago, I saw Zayn Malik from One Direction and now a solo career. He'd hurt himself and he was in a wheelchair. And I went, oh, I hope he's taking care of himself. He seems like a nice young man. And I was like, no, what's happened? But it is like teenagers that are dealing with these incredible things. They're children. And the amount of shame that is put on children when an adult should have been in charge blows my mind regularly. I hope it's better now. But I remember things like I got in trouble for different things where it's like an adult should have been in charge. I should not have been in charge.
Yeah, I shouldn't have been in charge in that six of that boy. I mean, I was 10 years older than him. And I mean, that would never happen by today's understanding of children and teenagers and adults. Like, there's so many more safeguards. I mean, children of the 80s, we really grew up in a different time, let's be honest.
My friend's child watched Stranger Things, and he was like, how did that, like, he was, like, obviously it's, like, monsters and stuff, but he's like, you do, like, a bunch of that stuff doesn't make sense. Like, that seems so scary. Like, well, yeah, you're not wrong. Yeah, like, a lot of the stuff is really scary. Like, he's watched YouTube videos, and he's like, how is that possible that like this was okay and that was okay? Like, at one point he hugged me. He'd be like, I'm sorry that that was what it was like when you were a kid. And I was like, I don't know how to process this. Thank you. And also congratulations, new generation of children. You're very wonderful, but
you're so self-passionate. It's difficult.
And also, Stephanie, isn't that also a story of how bad, and like, it's better now, but like, is how much better is it of like making sure there's inclusion where they're like, oh, just stick the kid in the middle of stuff, just put him, don't instruct anyone, don't like have conversations of what's the best thing, he'll tell you. It's like, have you never been a child who was uncomfortable telling like a teenager that you automatically think is very cool something? Like, nobody thought of these things. Like, that's
why. And he was six. Like, he was six, right? Yeah. It's too much responsibility for a child and a parent to be like, he'll tell you what he needs. He doesn't have. He's never been in this situation to explain to someone with words what he needs in that moment. Right. And I didn't have enough self-awareness or understanding to realize that, aren't you going to come with me? Was, please get in the sled with me. My parents always come with me. And you know, my life put me in a place of insane independence. I mean, my brother and I had responsibility, and as long as our responsibility was met, we didn't have a lot of rules. So I had extreme independence. So just this idea that someone needed me in this capacity was just foreign to me, because that's just not the environment I grew up in.
You were a child. And like, honestly, as someone with autism, the more I learn about like my social cue stuff, where I just thought I was bad at people, I'm like, a lot of times where you're like, I wasn't self-aware. I'm like, I don't think I'm self-aware enough at this point. If someone doesn't tell me this is exactly what I need, I misinterpret sometimes, because I need, like, I'm just like, oh, well, I mean, if it was that, they would tell me what it, you know, there's like all these layers of things in that story that I find really fascinating and difficult about that, is that like, no one, you could go up to those adults and go, I trusted you.
Yes. I never thought about that. They were in the cabin having coffee, right? They were like, even though we weren't supposed to be adulting and taking care of the Beaver Scouts, we were taking care of this pack of running wild 6-year-olds.
Yeah, and like, one of them could have just like fallen and broken their ankle or something, you know?
Well,
beyond the kid who had different needs, like, there's two kids taking care of a whole pack of little kids, like, diapers.
Yeah. I mean, up until the moment, the weekend had been fascinating for sure. So I have a question. This happened I talked about this a little bit in the Meet Your Dream Maker podcast, where we talked about memories, and I just kept having this dream that was looping. I would wake up and I'd fall asleep and I would go back to it. And I woke up and I reset myself by redoing my bedtime routine. And when I went to bed, I forced myself to relive joyfully happy memories of my child, right? Mm-hmm. To get out of this loop that my brain is when I for that night. Wow. And so I'm just wondering, you know, are there times where you consciously, I want to remember this and take memories and replay them in your mind so that they stick, right? Like the more we think about things, the more they stick in our long-term memory. I'm just curious if any of you ever have a moment that's so wonderful that you're like, I'm just going to remember this again and again and again, so I have it forever. That's actually something I do, but...
You know what? I actually resist that because I've noticed that the more you go back on a memory, the more you shift it over time. Like I have a friend of mine, I traveled with her, we were 20 and it was a life-changing trip. We were living in a car and on the West Coast and free. It was beautiful, but it's like, we talk about the trip now and it feels like we were on two different trips. Mm-hmm. And like, I know that she would like go over, like she would look at the pictures ad nauseum. She would like go back to it. Like she just has a very nostalgic kind of side to her. So I know that she replayed those memories like so many times in her head. Whereas like I tend to want to keep them intact by not revisiting them 1,000 times because memories can just shift. Like it's just the little things that you're like, wait, were they really wearing this? Was the furniture really there? Or do I just assume it was there? And it just over time, like it's tough. Like it really does change.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. And I try to remember, like if I tell the story, I try to stick to what I've told instead of trying to revisit it. It's like, okay, if I like write it down or if I just know this happened in this sequence and I just stick to it, mm-hmm. like never revisit it. Just like that's the story.
Yeah. Yeah. Trying to like recall a story that, you know, has different moving parts or requires different, well, there's visuals and there's auditory and there's feelings and there's like when you're trying to recite all of those things, you can definitely mix it up at some point or another. There is only one situation or one memory that I replay, and it's not even a memory. I think it's just the visual. I don't remember anything else, just the visual, but it was the time that I had visited Cliffs of Moher in Ireland. I don't know what it is about that one time. Maybe it's that I felt so peaceful, but whenever I feel anxious, I often just close my eyes and think of the picture that I had, you know, that I was seeing, right? Mm. And it helps me so much. That's the one thing that, but again, you know, I don't think that that's something that I could really mix up because it's not actually like a memory that I'm trying to recite or recall, right? It's kind of just like a picture or like a backdrop that I have permanently imprinted in my mind.
That's really beautiful and a really, really nice memory to be able to come back to, especially if it's something that can calm you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bring you peace. That's really nice. Yeah. Erin, any final thoughts from you?
Yeah, I by the way, called to, I'm going to be able to be a little bit late so I can stay for a little while longer. Sorry,
oh, that's okay.
Another part to edit out. But one of the things I think is really interesting is that memory can be so many things. Memory mm-hmm. can be an anchor that holds you down. Memory can be something that brings you peace. Memory can change meaning. I remember reading an article about like Roger Ebert, and he was talking about watching some of his favorite movies every decade and how his relationship with those movies and the memories he has about them. And those won't change. It's going to be the exact same movie again and again. So I feel like memory is so complicated because it is I think it was Josie was saying about like that the different people's experience of the same thing can be so different. Like the, you know, the movie Rashomon, if anyone's seen that, it's like one experience and it's through a bunch of different perspectives. And so it feels like such a different story. But mm-hmm. I feel like so much of, for me, of memory is realizing how to have a healthy, for me, relationship with memory of, and that I might be wrong about my experiences, that I might be, you know, what I saw as the reality of things, because I know I've talked to people who knew me as a kid and I was like, oh, I was like such a loser and nobody liked me and blah, blah, blah. And I was just this weirdo. And someone was like, no, like you were definitely weird, but like, you know, like I remember you writing a play that people liked. I remember, you know, this kind of stuff. And like, I was jealous of this thing. And this is a person who is beautiful, like gorgeous, very popular, was a very kind person as well. And she was telling me her experience of some of these things. And I was like, what? But you were beautiful and popular. And like her internal experience. So it is, memory is so complicated. Mm-hmm. And it is, it's one of the reasons why I think, despite it being like a very beautiful song, the song Memories is the one song that everyone remembers from Cats.
Yes, I love that song.
Yeah, because it is, memory is one of those things that makes us human, and our relationship with our own memory really builds us. And I have, as I talked about, like different experiences with some of my own memories and how they've changed, and how when I look back at some of the stuff as a kid, now I'm like, why did nobody tell me it was okay? Why did, like, if I was, you know, a weirdo queerdo now, what would my experience be as compared to when I was a kid in the 80s? Like, it's just so many things about. And I'm so glad we're talking about this in the, I feel like this could be an entire series of memory, of how you deal with memory and how people can use memory against you. People can use your past relationship and your past trust against you. And I'm so fascinated by my job is a storytelling coach, and a writer. And so I always, I'm thinking about how, and I'm not always doing it properly, how my own experience is coloring myself as a writer, myself as someone who's working on other people's stories with them. What negative things am I bringing that I don't realize that is because of lessons and memories and how I've put things together? And I find I often really connect with people when they share memories. Like I feel close to everyone in this podcast because they've been sharing their life experiences.
Go ahead. Sorry, go ahead.
I don't know if it's appropriate to bring this up, but how like our memories. And this is what it makes me think about. So I was abused in childhood, and there was a situation where my mother clearly walked in on the abuse that was happening and looked me in the eyes, turned around and closed the door behind her.
Oh my God.
And when I told her about this years later as an adult, she was like, I don't remember this. You must think I'm a terrible person. And but what fucks me up is that when I think back to this memory, I was quite young, maybe 6 years old. The way I remember it, the furniture was arranged in a certain way that I know I didn't have that furniture until years later. So it just, it messes me up because it's like, I can't believe I would have made that. I just, it's impossible. But then the little details. Yeah, but the little details, it's just like, that's the sort of thing, like we're talking like, could you prove it in a court case? Uh-huh. No. There's nothing I could prove. And like the little details, and that's where, I feel sorry for these women because those are the little things that slip. Those are the little details that then somebody's going to come back and say, but see, you're lying because it's impossible. Your furniture was not arranged this way, right? So...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. You gotta protect your memories, man.
Yeah. And also, I'm so sorry that the response is you must think I'm a terrible person, because that is a lot to have to deal with as well. That you now have to take care of someone. I can understand that instinct to be like, oh no, but that's an extra thing to have to deal with, and that's tough.
Yeah, that's on her. That's on her soul, man.
Oh, 100%. 100%. It is. And these things are very sensitive. So it's just the fact that, like, the instinct isn't, oh my God.
Right. Like, isn't that fishy? Like, I think if she was, like, truly a mother concerned, like, I imagine, like, you know, Stephanie, the way I know you, would you say this to your son, right? And like, how would you react if that was the situation with you? And then sometimes I'm like, nah, my mom was fishy. Like, you don't respond that way to a child that you're trying to protect.
People say all kinds of things when things are shocking,
right?
But the thing that breaks my heart is that then you have to look after someone as well. People make mistakes. People react badly
to
things, especially difficult things when they've done the wrong thing. But you having to deal with trauma and then caring for someone is crappy.
Yeah.
I know.
And the invalidation. I mean, I have a similar story of confronting an adult in adulthood about abuse that I suffered as a child. And the response was, I don't remember that. And then they just walked away. Right? And it's so invalidating, because you're like, what happened? Like, pretty sure it happens, you know? And I know for me, I just had to come to a place that I knew this, you know, I think what you said earlier, Celeste, like you knew that these things had happened to you, and it was you. And I think that I just came to this place where I knew that it was real, and that there was never ever going to be any kind of validation or reconciliation or understanding or discussion around it. Even if I was coming to it and saying, I understand you were in an awful place in your life and you were so stressed out. And, you know, if you could just acknowledge that this happened, I'm not blaming you, I'm not shaming you, but at least say, you know, my own life was really shit, and to have some sort of, like, you know, apologize, but like acknowledge. And I think that's where memory can be tricky too. When someone takes away our truth and our story, well, I don't remember it. That didn't happen. It's like, so that I think is a hard part of memory too, because I think it takes the person with the memory down a whole different path of their own wellness, emotionally and physically and intellectually. To be able to heal and move on from whatever that trauma is. And again, why so many people don't come forward, because we're not believed, you know? Sorry, please go ahead.
Yeah, it's also such a mind fuck, because it's like, okay, I was surrounded by people who, it's almost like it wasn't real, right? Like, if things happen, but nobody around you talks about it, acknowledges it, even pretends that it's real, like, it really fucks with your head, because you're raised to think a certain way about your family and the love that's there, the relationship you have. But then there's like this whole part that doesn't make sense, especially as a child, like you don't understand these things. So it really like can cause a rift in a person's mind where you're like, everything makes sense except for this glaring omission.
I feel like it, like for some experiences I've had, it's like part of you becomes a ghost. And it is like, it's there and nobody hears it and sees it but you. And it is, I've been rewatching Russian Doll, which is genius. And I don't know how I feel about ghosts, because I don't know how I feel about anything. Who knows? My belief system is, I don't know. I believe people. I believe in, but like this is how the world works. No idea. But there's a moment in Russian Doll where they're talking about ghosts. It's like, buildings aren't haunted. People are haunted.
Yes. Yes. I forgot about that.
And I think it's it's so important. And I think regularly about, and I'm going to get very emotional about something that feels very strange to get emotional about, but there was a day and I was going for a walk and I was just having this awful day. And I saw this fence and this tree had grown around this fence. And I stopped and I just started to cry like I had not cried in years. Which I can only imagine because it was near a high school, how terrifying it was for all these boys in like private school uniforms to just see this woman crying in front of a tree. Yeah, I feel like I turned some children into poets or something. But anyway, I was just like, this is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen, because this tree adapted and grew around something that should have stopped it. That tree should have died. And that tree grew around this thing and for who knows how long. That fence had to adapt to that tree. Mm-hmm. And it is. And it's like, it's a little simplistic, but sometimes I need an image that's simplistic. And when I think about things where there's times where, you know, I've struggled with mental health and mm-hmm. I think about that tree and just being like, all the ways that I am a tree that grew around the fence, and instead of being ashamed of that, seeing how beautiful that is.
Yeah.
And also how much it terrifies boys in private school uniforms.
I think that is an absolutely beautiful, beautiful metaphor. And like, it's not just a physical metaphor as well, right? It's not just one you're just, like, it's a thing that actually happened and you were able to take into yourself and carry it with you. That's beautiful. It's absolutely
thank you so
beautiful.
Much. Well, on that note, I do have to go.
Yeah, I do want to thank all of you for being here tonight and sharing with me. It's been wonderful to hear your stories, and thank you for being vulnerable. I appreciate you all. I think you are all such wonderful, thriving women who have risen to the challenges of your lives. And again, I just really am so grateful and appreciate you being here. I'm so glad you're here.
Thanks. So glad.
Thank
you're
you so
here.
Much. And Josie, whoever that person is, you aim me at them. I'm not tough, so but much. I'm wily like a spider monkey.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Oh my goodness.
If you're interested in joining the monthly Ode Bitch Boast Gathering, you can find event listings and tickets, which are free, on Eventbrite, as well as on the Town Ritual Facebook page. Search Town Rituals online. If you'd like to participate in a future podcast, please send me an email at townrituals@gmail.com, noting podcast in the subject line.
Cool. Love you all. Thank you.
Love you.
As bye. Grandma said, love you and leave you.
Wonderful.
That's hilarious.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye. Bye.